This is Primetime on KTEP, a program that focuses on economic development, mobility, security, and quality of life issues in El Paso and surrounding areas.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of El Paso Primetime. I'm Richard Dayu with Thunderbird Management Consulting. Today with me, we have, for me, a longtime friend, acquaintance for many years back, Mr. Prentice Lofton, who currently serves as the conductor and artistic director for the El Paso Choral Society and Orchestra, correct?
That is correct.
Good to have you on board,
Prentice. Thank you. It's good to be back after so many years.
It has been way too many years. Well, thank you for being with us today. By the way, I want just a little shout out to the young lady who works with you in ticketing, Jimena Huante. Jimena came by here to the studios and brought me a letter that she prepared asking me to reach out to you to talk about your program, which we're going to do today.
And here I am.
And here you are, just like that. So, Jimena, you have a type A personality in a positive way. And thank you for doing all this. So that behind us, Prentice, let's get started, first of all, and talk about your background in music, which is extensive, yours and your wife both.
Yeah, I went to a lot of universities and got degrees, and my background in music started when I was 15, my first little church choir. And then I taught at UTEP for 13 years. Then we began El Paso Opera back in 1994. At that time, we also started the El Paso Chamber Choir out of the El Paso Choral Society as a part of the Choral Society. And that group would sing in most of the things in this region, Juarez, even Chihuahua, sing with the Las Cruces groups. And so I did that for a number of years, and I still do that one. And then in 2004, we started El Paso Conservatory of Music. And that has been going on now for 22 years. Then a number of years later, right before the pandemic hit, I was called by a church to see if I would start a really high-quality little church choir. And so I did that.
What church was that, can you say?
Immaculate Conception. Conception downtown. It's a small church.
Yeah.
But they do the Latin Mass, which means it's all in Latin. It's the old school. And they asked me to put together a very high-quality music program of choir. We started small, and then and we were starting to build, and then the pandemic hit. Well, when the pandemic hit, we were with the El Paso Choral Society. We were about to do a big major work at the Chavez Theater, and when the
pretty good sized venue.
Oh yes, and we had probably a 50-piece orchestra and 100 singers or so, and we were going to do the Puccini Gloria, the Leonard Bernstein Chichester Psalms, and we were going to do a Mendelssohn Piano Concerto. Well, the pandemic hit 3 weeks before our performance. So I still have the poster, and it's the only poster I've ever had that did not come with a performance. And so it has sort of a special place on my wall. That one's not been done.
I think everyone who got through that craziness that was the pandemic, now looking back, hindsight's always 2020, but as we look back, we probably, I'm sure some of our listening audience will strenuously disagree with me when I say we may have overreacted a bit, because we did kind of shut down the entire society of our communities as a result of this thing. And it, in some cases, there are parts of the economy that are still recovering several years following the end of it. But again, you know, hindsight and whatnot, it's a shame. And I guess the idea of bringing that back, have you guys discussed trying to have a resurgence of that particular performance or performances
We're going
to
start.
We're all good to go.
Yeah, we're going to start smaller. That was a huge performance. Each of those performances were probably in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $60,000 to do the performance. And so what we are doing now is we are doing chamber choir and chamber orchestra and doing performances that may use maybe 40, 45 performers instead of 150. But after the pandemic, everything with the El Paso Choral Society just shut down for 6 years. And in fact, in different places of the world, there were a couple of choirs that would try to keep going, and people were dying in the choirs because they would spread through singing and all of the saliva coming out. Oh, it is the most dangerous thing you can do in a pandemic is singing. And so I'm glad we did that.
Singing is in a group.
In a group.
You're still allowed to sing in the shower.
No, singing in a group right next to everyone, then you're...
That makes sense.
And it does make sense.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we didn't do it, and we never did really get going again until recently with this little church choir. It grew to the point that we started doing incredible music. We do masses at certain times of the year, that is with orchestra and choir. And it's the same repertoire that I would put on stage and perform in other places, as well as before and after the masses, we play symphonic music with the orchestra.
Okay, we need to spend a little time on this because this is something new to me. I'm guessing a good chunk of our audience is learning this for the first time as well. So you say you do some masses. How often do you do them? Where do you perform them?
Okay, the masses are at Immaculate Conception Church. It holds
downtown.
Downtown at 118 Campbell.
Yep.
And it holds a little over 200 people, and we're in the choir loft, but we have just enough room for about 20 in the orchestra and about 20, 22 in the choir. And so we do this professional level music with this little choir. Plus, we add 10 or so professional singers, and of course, we bring in the orchestra that I've conducted for many years. We use some of the best players here in El Paso and in the Las Cruces symphonies, and so it's just a wonderful performance, and we've been giving these for 4 or 5 years now, and so we have an incredible repertoire of, like, string symphonies by Mendelssohn or Haydn symphonies, some of the earlier symphonies that can be played with smaller groups, plus Mozart masses. We've done a number of those.
So I have to ask you, how does the public learn about these programs, these special programs? Is there somewhere they can go to find out it's posted, you're performing at Immaculate okay. on such and such a date?
This is actually sort of funny. I asked the pastor once, the main priest at Immaculate Conception, I said, "You want me to advertise these?" He said, "No, not really, because every time we do these, it's packed, and we can't even get all our people in here to do them." And that started
making us think
it's time to do a concert. And we've been doing these for a few years now. And the level is very similar to what I always did when I was working in the professional choral and orchestral world, because the group had grown musically as well as we bring in some pros to be with us. And so this concert coming up on April 12th is the first concert that we're going to give of the same music that we give that we will be preparing for Easter. And so we will do probably 3 or so of these a year if everything goes well. And we'll be doing this at St. Patrick's Cathedral, April 12 at 4:30 p.m.
Yeah, which is actually what drove this conversation today.
Yes.
So this special event is available on Sunday, April 12th at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Yes.
Right there on North Mesa downtown. And if folks want to get more information or purchase tickets, they can go, I assume, onto your website.
Yes, El Paso Choral Society, if you Google it, or www.epchoralsociety.org.
Okay. So for those of you who tuned in perhaps a few minutes after the show began, I'm currently visiting with my friend Prentice Lofton, who is the conductor and artistic director for the El Paso Choral Society and Orchestra. And we're talking about an upcoming event, April the 12th, that you all will perform at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And, of course, there is no issue with enough space there. That's a
700.
700.
Plus.
And they fill it up pretty quickly, but it's it's also got great acoustics there.
Yes, very alive. And I think probably there's some people that would want to know, okay, well, what is the St. Cecilia Choir and Orchestra as opposed to the El Paso Choral Society and Orchestra? Well, what we are doing as the El Paso Choral Society for our first performance is, in a sense, we're hiring the St. Cecilia Choir and Orchestra to perform a concert at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And so that'll be one of the series that we do as a part of the Choral Society, to do these choral, orchestral, sacred works that we all are accustomed to doing on the concert stage, not necessarily in churches here in El Paso, though throughout the world, you will find that these kinds of performances or this music is used in Catholic services. And then there is the other side to the El Paso Choral Society, which is where we produce our own. Now, I'm the conductor of both groups, and that's why it works easily together to do the St. Cecilia Choir and Orchestra. That is the Immaculate Conception Choir and Orchestra. The El Paso Choral Society Choir and Orchestra is a nonprofit group on its own. We do our own performances, which this year we will be doing an a cappella, which means no instruments, for the first concert of 24 professional singers in July. Then we're going to do a community Messiah sing-along, Handel's Messiah sing-along, where people can come and sing the Messiah with us, which I've probably
During the Christmas holidays.
It'll probably be in November.
So right up approaching the holiday.
Yeah, we always have to watch the Las Cruces Symphony schedule and the El Paso Symphony schedule to make sure we have the orchestra.
Well, that's true.
Because they're taken.
Yeah.
And so we use the same people. And so we're going to do that as a part of the Choral Society series. And then also we're planning to do the one-act Christmas opera, Mall and the Night Visitors, the first week of January, which is the appropriate time because the kings come and so forth to see the baby Jesus. And so the appropriate time is to do that in January. And so we're going to do that one-act opera.
So is any of this information that you're sharing with us right now available on the website, or will it become available on the website?
Okay, it is. We're putting it all together right now. It will all be on the website soon. But like I said, we have to wait and make sure we have the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra set.
And their schedule.
Their schedule.
And El Paso.
And El Paso. Well. And El Paso Opera. I think they perform usually in February.
They do. In fact, so, we just had them on a few weeks back, and they have their performance in February at St. Rogers. That's where they performed.
And so we have to work around all of these schedules to make sure we can get all of the performers that we need.
So what you're saying is that our listening audience today is hearing all of this for the first time ever anywhere. This is live. Well, we're actually recorded, but you know what I mean.
This is sort of coming out and saying, here we go. And I have to say that the reason that this is happening, it wasn't really my effort so much. It was four people in this little church choir. Three of them are professional singers, and one of them is Jimena, the person you mentioned at the beginning. They wanted to get all of this started and put back together with the El Paso Choral Society. And so one of them is acting as the executive director, another one as the operations and development, another one is marketing, and then Jimena, the one that we've discussed, she's doing ticketing. And I told them
And are all of these people also professional artist performers?
Three are. Jimena is a student at UTEP. She's in the music school as a voice major. And they are all working as volunteers. At this point, we're just putting everything together and everyone's working very hard. And actually, I told them, I said, you know, this is going to succeed or fail on your shoulders, because this is, in the past, I did most everything. No, but in the past, I did pretty much everything. And I told them, we need a new generation of people to see that choral music and choral orchestral music moves forward.
Absolutely.
And these people are in their early 30s, late 20s, yeah. And then he meant as
generation.
A student. Yeah. And so we're developing a next generation. And we actually have another person that's coming on board and on the team. And one of them is Luke Minton, who he's going to join our board. And he was just on Jeopardy. But he went through our El Paso Conservatory. And then there is another girl that we are hoping, I won't use her name because she hadn't agreed to yet, but we're contacting her, and she was in Yvonne's Young Ladies Choir. These are professional, young professionals now doing their own company or their own career, and we are getting these singers and these people that we trained years ago. I'm not going to tell you how old we are, but I had my first church choir 50 years ago.
Okay. Okay, so you're over 40.
I'm past 30s.
Okay, so. Absolutely. So I was interested to hear from you when I asked you, or before we went on the air, your response to my question on what the age range is of these performers.
I would say 20s up to probably we have people that are 60 or older. There's not really an age range. We like to get them after college, let them go through college, and then afterwards they need something to sing. And I remember that one of my main focuses on wanting to start El Paso Opera was to keep the students that I had trained at UTEP, because I was a professor there 13 years, I wanted to keep them singing, because I had watched them for years finish their degree. They're in their early 20s, and they quit singing, and they start teaching high school, junior high, and their voices don't even mature until they're 30, so they don't even know how good they could have gotten if they had continued to sing.
Well, life gets in the way, right?
And it sure does.
Unless you make that your top priority. I mean, we see it all. I've gone through that with my own children.
Right.
You know, they look like they were tracking on a really great artistic career. Mm-hmm. Luckily, they've gone on to other careers and have been successful. But, you know, one of my kids, our kids, played the violin beautifully and took lessons for years. And mm-hmm. Once she went off to college, they kind of took a back seat. And,
right.
You know, maybe she'll pick it up again later, but probably not. And certainly not in a professional capacity, right?
Well, I'll mention this one person. I just heard that this one singer, and I think I'm sure her husband also, Veronica Herrera, I heard that she wants to sing again. Well, she sang for me 15, 18 years ago, she and her husband both. And I heard they were wanting to sing again. Well, they have had their kids, and they've gotten them through school pretty much, and so now they want to sing again. So
That's
we
great.
Have those kind coming
yeah,
back.
Yeah, come back to it.
Come back.
Yeah. Then you have people like me who are not allowed to sing in public under any circumstances.
Well, you can sing in public, just far away.
Stand in the middle of San Jacinto Plaza.
There you go.
During lunch hour when no one's listening.
There you go.
We have just a few minutes left, so I do want to, first of all, remind our audience that we're doing this great interview with Prentice Lofton, who is the conductor and artistic director for the El Paso Choral Society and Orchestra. And we're talking about an upcoming performance on April the 12th, which will be conducted at St. Patrick's Cathedral, right there on Mesa near downtown.
Right.
And again, if you're driving, you don't have to write this down. Please don't. We want you to drive safely. But this is a pretty easy website URL to remember, epchoralsociety.org. And if you go there, you can find all the information you need on ticket pricing, which right. $25 and down. That's the great part. So that's a pretty big bargain, you know?
Yeah. Or you can just go to Google and Google El Paso Choral Society or El Paso Chorale, and we'll probably pop up.
I'm sure you will. Yeah. And we want you to be thinking about supporting this organization, for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that I had Ariane on several weeks ago to talk about the then upcoming opera performance that was being held at St. Rogers. And now we have the Choral Society here with us. The symphony will be on in the near-term future as well. And it's because it is the arts, and I'm pontificating a bit, but it is the arts that help any society to mature and to appreciate the finer things in our community, which is the ethereal things rather than just the monetary things.
Right.
It's so easy to just pull out your cell phone, your smartphone, and check out the next movie at Flicks or wherever you're going, Cinemark, and hop over, watch a movie. By the time you paid for your tickets and your concession, you spent way more than this
right.
to get, frankly, fairly mediocre entertainment. This is of the highest quality, and we as a community need to do a better job. We used to, at one time, mm-hmm. do a much better job as a community, collectively, in supporting the fine arts and getting out to those performances and helping them, encouraging the performers. It took a little bit of a dive. You mentioned COVID, and certainly that period of time did not help anything that involved public engagement. But in the few minutes we have left, I'd like you to just take a moment, share with the audience again. You talk about the St. Cecilia Choir and Orchestra. For those that may have tuned in a few minutes late, if you could just touch a little bit on that, as well as to remind everybody about this upcoming performance.
Well, the performance is going to feature Gounod's Missa Solemnis. It is a well-known choral orchestral piece. Gounod is the same composer that wrote the operas Faust and the opera Romeo and Juliet.
And which so I did not know.
Those have actually been performed at the Chavez Theater when I was the director of El Paso Opera. And so you'll recognize his music to some degree. And then we also are doing some movements of symphonies by Mendelssohn, by Haydn, and then we're doing a couple of pieces, suites by Bach, and that one of them features flute. Joy Zalkind will be playing a flute on that suite. And then we're going to be doing some beautiful a cappella pieces. Hopefully we'll be in the round or surrounding the audience at St. Patrick's when we sing the Ave Maria by Bruckner and the Ave Maria by Bebel. And then we're also doing an interesting piece by Gesualdo, Ovos Omnes. It is his music sort of points toward the later 1800s that we might hear. You know, it's music that you don't expect all of the harmony changes. And then the St. Cecilia Choir, it's really appropriate to be called that because the first piece they're singing is the St. Cecilia Missa Solemnis. And St. Cecilia is the patron of music. Patron saint of music. And so it sort of fits the choir. And that group has become a really fine performing group. Our soloists will be Tom Wu on bass. Our soprano will be Sua Nunez. And our tenor soloist will be Andrew Fellows. All wonderful singers.
That's great. Now, I am not going to attempt to say the name of the performance is coming up on April 12th. I'll leave that to you. So if you wouldn't mind telling your audience again the name of the actual performance.
Okay, the performance is the Missa Solemnis by Gounod, And that is the main piece, and it will be by the St. Cecilia Choir and Orchestra. And then we will be performing Mendelssohn's String Symphony 7, Movement 1, the Bach Suite 2, Movement 7. Also, we'll be doing Haydn's Symphony 59, the first movement, very exciting pieces. Plus, we will be doing the Vittoria, polyphonic, Renaissance style, Vere Languores, Gesualdo's Ovo Somnus, same period, but boy, does it sound different. And then the two Ave Marias by Bebel and by Bruckner. It's going to be a beautiful performance.
I'm so glad I had you do that instead of me. I would have butchered it. So our audience, just to remind you, on this Saturday, you only have a little over a week to get your tickets for this brilliant performance because... that's performing on April the 12th.
Yes.
And so we'd like you to get out there and support our artists and our community. And I'm kind of a rock and roll guy, but I'll tell you, every time I go to the opera or a performance like this or to the symphony, I'm reminded that I'm there because I just love beautiful music. And that's what this is. So we encourage you all to get out there and support this initiative, support our performers and our artistic community in El Paso. Prentice, thanks for being on the show with us again.
You're welcome.
We appreciate everything that you're doing for our community, and we want to thank the artists who work with you as well. For those of you who are accustomed to listening to the show, you know, even after we just finished our pledge drive, that it's an ongoing effort. So if you're already a member of KTEP, thank you for your membership. If you've not yet joined, please take a moment, think about the importance of public media, of NPR, your local NPR station for the Southwest, and be generous. You can make a pledge one time, or you can do it as a sustaining member, as I am, and you can have that deducted from your bank account or charged to your credit card, and you can change it up or down as your needs change at any time without any pressure. We thank you for listening to us on this Saturday, and we wish you a great Saturday afternoon.
El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. Views expressed by the host and guest don't necessarily reflect those of KTEP. For inquiries about our public affairs programming, email ktep@utep.edu. Richard Dayoub appears courtesy of Thunderbird Consulting. The producer and editor is Daisy Morales. The show is recorded at the Communication Department at the University of Texas at El Paso. To learn more about the program or to listen to past episodes, visit ktep.org.